go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week. I'm excited. I hope you are as well. Headphones work much better when they're plugged all the way in. I was gone for a couple of days, and I suspect that porn intern junior grade Ferg was back here listening to music and learning stuff and playing stuff. And consequently, the headphones weren't. It sounded funny. So, but everything's okay now. Let's see. Let's check this real quick, because I forgot to. Yeah, that's a dial tone. That means the phones work. Okay. We're in good shape for a Monday. Happy Monday. Glorious Monday. And it's a Monday that sort of lends itself to our new Monday theme. Moran Monday. We have a Moran. We've got a couple of Morans. We've got Morans writing about Morans. We ain't hurting for... We are Moran poor. There we go. But we've also got a sort of a common theme going. Or not a common theme, but... No, it's not common at all. It's... What's the word I'm looking for? We got two stories coming out of the South, one close to home, spiritually speaking, and one not so. Let's see if I can just make it work by jumping into it. By the way, where I was on the road. This past weekend, I was down in beautiful Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it is a, you know what, that's a beautiful campus. It really is a beautiful campus. The whole area is a little too flat for my liking, but it's a beautiful place. Once you get away from the interstate, and once you get away from along I-40 between, say, Winston-Salem and... Little past Greensboro, nothing but sprawl and giant billboards for outlets that bargains, bargains, bargains. Sorry, no bargains, but you know that. But once you get off the highway and you get into a little place like Chapel Hill, it is an exquisite. It's gorgeous. Small town, college town. I love college towns. What can I say? And I got to speak to some very engaged young people at PowerShift Carolinas, and I want to thank the folks involved for inviting me down there. It was a marvelous, wonderful experience, and an excellent opportunity to make the horrors of mountaintop removal real, or more real. For folks who really want to take charge of making the world a better place on behalf of their generation. See, my generation and the generations afterward, we've screwed the planet up real good, and it's their turn. 20-somethings that are just figuring out, what do I want out of this world? Do I want a 55-inch, 555-inch, do I want a wall-size, the big screen TV and lots of HD coming in and trips to Wally World 3 times a day. No. And I get the sense that there really is some rethinking going on. about what the world they're going to be adults in while we're gumming our creamed corn, if not pushing up daisies, will look like. And I commend all the young people. There were, you know, there were a good 7,500 of them, and from schools all around the Carolinas. And it really was inspiring. They're dedicated to the idea of finding an energy future that involves, well, that's got a more of a justice component to it, that is diminished in cruelty, that doesn't necessarily have to ride on the backs of poor folks. I know from talking to a couple of them that they had a good time and that they had a great learning experience at PowerShift Carolinas. And I did, too, because it's inspiring for me to know that there is a next generation coming up who will pick up the torch and will carry it forward and will not let the bastards win. So that's where I was. And I got home late last night and just sort of started trying to get my head back into the prospect of getting back into the routine of being on the air. This is birthday week. Amazing enough. On Saturday, officially, the date falls on Saturday this year, we will be 4 years old. The horn will be 4 years old. It is hard to imagine how much has come and gone, how many have risen and fallen in those 4 years, but the horn is still here. And it's still here because of you, and it's still here because of the incredible dedication of the people who volunteer their time for the horn, our news ninjas, our blogger, moderators in the chat room, Sue, who has done so much to just climb learning curves and take on new responsibilities and learn new stuff. She provided me with some great mountaintop removal video to take with me. All on the supposition that this has to survive, because it's not happening anywhere else. So it is birthday week. It's also birthday day for our pal Sparky from the chat room. Very happy birthday to him. You've heard him on the program from time to time. Happy birthday, Sparky. Many happy returns. So where to go this evening? Well, like I said, it's not really an incongruity. It's not really a commonality. But I was going over my email before the program started. And by the way, this in from our pal Marty: college towns and college campuses are great places to be, especially during warm weather. Oh yes. Never forget my fellow student at the University of Alabama. He was from Nebraska. His name was Jeffrey. And it was February, and it was warming up in Tuscaloosa, and all of a sudden, that one warm day in February, you get all the sweaters and the sweatpants went away, and it was just like, wow, where'd all our beautiful fellow students come from? And he just looks at me and goes, I love winter in the South. Yeah, I understand that. I understand that sentiment very well. Of course, now that I'm getting up in years, as it were, now that I'm, you know, at 46, I kept looking around the campus saying, when did they start admitting toddlers to college? Because I guess it's kind of like looking through binoculars from the wrong end. Everything seems smaller. I don't think I was ever that young, but of course I was. I was looking at my email before the program started, and I saw a note from our blogger, Texas Betsy. And she dropped me a note just wanted to let you know that my bar mitzvah student mentioned mountaintop removal in his Torah discussion speech on Saturday. His reading was about creation, and he talked about our responsibility to the earth and to creation. At one point, he said that we need to make sure that we don't cause further global warming or blow up any more mountains. His service project involved helping with the landscaping at a Habitat for Humanity new home, and he told the congregation how using organically grown plants native to Texas was in keeping with honoring the way that God originally created the world. That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. And again, proof that the next generation, and that's a generation, that's even a generation behind the folks that I was talking to, over the weekend. And you see, that's the thing, the like the dinosaurs of which hydrocarbons are constituently comprised, and like the flora and the flora around which they lived, which makes up coal, the coal creatures and the coal people are on their way out. The mountaintop removers are on their way out. Don Blankenship is on his way out. And these next generations will look back, I have no doubt, mark this down, and ask, why didn't they get it? Why didn't more people get it? Well, you know, we're doing our part every day to make sure that more people do get it. But there's a lot of missionary work, so to speak, for the next generations coming along to do, to talk amongst themselves, to talk to their fellow age group, and to make clear that it's going to have to be a different kind of world once they're in charge. I look forward to it. I truly do. So that was Texas Betsy's report out of the synagogue. How much more painful it becomes then to see a story like this coming out of course, come on. I mean, I'm sorry, David in South Carolina, but you know, of course, South Carolina. There's a newspaper down there. It's the Orangeburg, South Carolina Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom. No. It's the Orangeburg, South Carolina Times and Democrat. That, of course, means that it's a Republican rag, necessarily. And they included on Sunday an op-ed piece written by the local Republican Party chairman, who are, and apparently it's too big a job for just one guy. And guy, of course, it's a guy. It's not a woman. It's not a person of color. It's not, no. It's a couple of white guys. I'm certain. I don't have a photograph, but I'm certain it's a couple of white guys. I mean, you know, if Rush can say, oh, and by the way, Sherrod Brown is a black man. It's all about race. When Sherrod Brown is a white guy, then, you know, I'll err on the other side and assert that Edwin O. Merwin Jr. and James S. Ulmer Jr. are probably pretty pink guys. But they wrote this editorial that was basically an apologia for Senator Jim Demented, DeMint, who has been under increasing criticism. You know, this is the guy who said that health care would be Obama's Waterloo. That if we can stop him on health care, we can stop him in, you know, just garbage. One of the criticisms of Dement came from a Democratic state senator who said that Dement wasn't bringing enough money back to South Carolina. And that was really what got Messrs. Merwin and Ulmer all worked up. And they wrote as follows. Really, this was published in a newspaper, apparently it's the only newspaper that in you know of any substance in Orangeburg, South Carolina. And they published it. Somewhere there is an editorial page editor who went over and said, looks fine by me. Run it! And there was a headline writer, and it, sure, why not run it? And Ulmer and Merwin looked at each other and said, you know what, I think we've written a beautiful piece of prose here. I think we got us an op-ed piece for the ages. Because what they wrote, and this is the excerpt, really, published in a newspaper, I'm not kidding. There's a saying that the Jews, who are wealthy, got that way not by watching dollars, but instead by taking care of the pennies and the dollars taking care of themselves. By not using earmarks to fund projects for South Carolina, and instead using actual bills, Senator DeMint is watching our nation's pennies and trying to preserve our country's wealth and our economy's viability to give all an opportunity to secede. I mean, succeed. We ain't talking seceding. No, to succeed. There we go. Yeah. No, really. So, in a synagogue in Texas, a young bar mitzvah student addresses the congregation on the need to not blow up any more mountains for coal and the need to be good stewards of what his faith teaches him is God's creation. But in South Carolina, nasty, hateful old stereotypes die hard if die they do at all. With the Orangeburg, South Carolina Times and Democrat actually printing an op-ed piece containing one of the most blighted, ignorant, and benighted stereotypes that still have any lingering existence in this country today. That of the Jewish businessman who is, in fact, a penny pincher. There's a saying that the Jews who are wealthy got that way not by watching dollars, but instead by taking care of the pennies and the dollars taking care of themselves. Astonishing, isn't it? It's hard to even make jokes about this. It's not a joking matter. Even the Palmetto Scoop, which is a conservative blog, wrote, who in mainstream America thinks it's a good idea to write about something like that in a guest editorial? It's people like Ulmer and Merwin that make many folks fear for the future of the once grand old party. And their county chairman, too. But you know what? That sounds just too breathless and pearl-clutching by half for the Palmetto Scoop. Because the fact of the matter is, that's acceptable repig-licking behavior. Now, see, they're getting on us now because they want us to be politically correct. And to be politically correct, you can't say that everybody, you know, first law of holes, when you're in one, stop digging, Ulmer, Merwin. Well, we didn't mean anything by it. Yeah, you did. What you meant by it was the fact that thing is still rattling around in that sloshy soup between your ears that passes for brains. But of course, that's really not surprising, is it? Especially not in, and I promise this is not sports talk. But it's not surprising when you think about how the right wing has played out the NFL thing with Flush Flembaugh. Namely, what was it they did on Fox? We're all Rush Limbaugh now? Really? That's great. I'm waiting for the check. I can't wait till the first installment comes in on the $40 million a year. Of course, it's going to be kind of lonely having to live in that 24,000-square-foot mansion with nothing but a cat and a maid to send out for my OxyContin fix. And tone deaf. And they don't understand. And this is what they mean, I think, when they talk about, we want to take our country back. Mm-hmm. We do. What they mean by that is they want to live in a world where they can use racial slurs and use ethnic bigotries and use filth like the slur that was used by Merwin and Ulmer, and not be criticized for it. But you know what? No matter how loudly they scream or how hard they try, they can't have that world back. And I'm pretty sure of what I say, simply because of what I saw, among other things, this past weekend. Because the bigotries and the hatreds that terminate and stay resident in places like South Carolina or Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, you know, the drill, the usual suspects, those dinosaurs are becoming extinct. Although it is true that once in a while, One of those dinosaurs rears up sort of and reminds us that they're still around and they're not all gone yet. I suppose a classic case of that would be the Justice of the Peace down in Louisiana. Who recently refused a marriage license. Outright refused a marriage license to a man and woman because one was of a skin shade tone darker than the other. And said, I don't do interracial marriages because I'm standing up for the cheerings. Well, I was really proud to read earlier today that the couple in question, Beth and Terrence McKay, had fired back. And it was a beautiful line, and I'm sure it really hangs in Justice of the Peace, Keith Bardwell. And of course, he's, again, he's a white guy, Keith Bardwell. Must have really stuck in his craw because Terrence McKay said, he says the only reason he doesn't marry interracial couples is dealing with because of the offspring of the marriages. Well, if it wasn't for interracial couples today, we wouldn't have our president. So for him to take that outlook, that's still 1800s or something. And Mr. McKay, to be fair, it's still sort of 1600s or 1500s or 1400s. It may very well be antediluvian. Now, under the circumstances, Louisiana right-wing exorcist governor, religious freak, Piyush Jindal, had to condemn it. And Piyush Jindal and Senator Mary Landrieu, the one who said the only reason we want a public option is because we all want free health care, they both issued a call for Bardwell's resignation. What's interesting, however, is the fact that Senator Diaper Dave Vitter, as of the beginning of this program at least, still hasn't. Yeah, with Senator Vitter's office, it's still crickets. Because, see, any deviation from the bigotry, any deviation from the usual list of hatreds that are attendant upon membership in the Republican Party, and the next thing you know, they'll be booing his ass, too, just like they did Lindsey Graham not too long back for simply saying that he was going to work on a climate change bill with Senator Kerry. They called him a traitor. They called him a Republican in name only. I don't do interracial marriages because I don't want to put children in a situation they didn't bring on themselves. Yeah, that's a troubling sentence. Because by virtue of the fact that this guy's a conservative and the fact that this guy is re-pig-licking, he participates with every trip to the ballot box, probably with every trip to church, probably with every breath he takes, he participates in putting children in situation, what is it, a situation they didn't bring on themselves. This man's got conservative family values. Well, by definition, that means that, well, you know how he votes. And that puts lots of children in situations they didn't bring on themselves. The election of George Bush put children in situations they didn't bring on themselves that they didn't even know was coming at them in the form of Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath of the collapse of the levees. There were plenty of children who lived in the lower Ninth Ward and who lived along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And Grover Norquist's policy of making government so weak that one could strangle it in the bathtub really put a lot of Louisiana and Mississippi and Gulf Coast children in situations they didn't bring on themselves. And the swirling, rising, fetid, stinking waters didn't ask anybody if their parents were an interracial couple. And the waters were certainly non-discriminatory. They drowned black and white, Asian, native, without any form of choice, except perhaps economics. But wait, that's another one of those choices that little children didn't bring on themselves. Far better to concern oneself with whether or not the children of a marriage has this guy ever refused a marriage license to a Jimmy Bubba Joe Bob and Teener Tammy Sue, nice and lily white and dumber than dirt, coming to get all murried up when you know that their offspring are going to be born behind the eight ball and remain there, yea, verily, for the rest of their natural born days? Has he ever withheld a license for them? I'm guessing no. Of course, when Terrence McKay said, if it wasn't for interracial couples today, we wouldn't have our president, that probably wasn't a selling point for Keith Bardwell. Keith Bardwell probably, that's right, that's what I'm talking about. We'd be able to take our country, we wouldn't have to take our country back if it wasn't for interracial couples. See what I was talking about? See what kind of trouble comes in there? That poor little old baby didn't realize he was going to grow up and ruin America by bringing socialism and taking away all our freedoms. He didn't realize that. He didn't have any choice in that. But somebody let that Kenyan and that good Kansas white girl get married, and look what it done. God almighty. Just makes your eyes feel like they're just spinning like slot machine wheels. Tilt. Bar. Lemons. That outlook, that's still 1800s or something. Oh, that's so caveman. No, you know what? That's probably not fair to the cavemen. There's no evidence to suggest that the cavemen discriminated against each other based on skin color. For the most part, they were all cavemen. That meant they probably didn't bathe a lot, so it was kind of hard to tell. Gronk want bath. Gronk have to invent plumbing first. That 15,000 years away. Gronk going to be dirty for a while. But what a time. What a time. So the question is, what kind of blowback will there be in South Carolina for Senator Demented? Because just as David Vitter has not joined in to criticize Keith Bardwell and demand his resignation, so too Jim Demented is doing his best Crickets impression with regard to the editorial, the op-ed piece defending him by saying that he's every bit as much of a penny pincher as a Jew is. You know, even mocking in those terms, it feels hurtful. I don't even want those, you know, I hate to even give those attitudes life. Even in satire. But that's what they said. He's watching our nation's pennies like a Jew would. You know, there's so many layers to that. There are assumptions that underlie bigotry like that that are positively sickening. In their blithe inattention to realities. You know, there's being born Jewish, or being born anything else, is not some sort of a club membership card. Now, you can grow up and you can join the club, or you can reject it. It's a matter of personal choice. But the idea that Edwin O. Merwin Jr. and James S. Ulmer Jr. Have decided that, no, you're stuck in that club, is sickening. It makes a mockery of the suffering of the poor. Because you know what? When it comes to suffering in poverty, it's not like one side's better at it than another. Because poverty is poverty. And the misery it causes does not know ideological or religious or ethnic barriers. Poor is poor is poor. And as that traveling itinerant rabbi once said, the poor ye have always with ye. But that doesn't mean it's all right to dump on them. But these guys, you know, you got to wonder if Edwin O. Merwin Jr. or James S. Ulmer Jr. have ever even met someone who's Jewish. Or for that matter, someone who's Muslim or someone who's Hindu. Or anything other than their lily-white, white-bread little selves. I suspect not. And you have to wonder what would happen if they did. Well, did you see there? We wasn't criticizing. We was praising. We liked the fact. Oh, Jesus. You can almost hear what the after the fact justification is going to be. Rule one is to claim they took us out of context. That's what they did. That wasn't what we meant. No, see, I've got the whole paragraph here. But that doesn't stop them from saying they were taken out of context. I suppose if there was enough of a media presence to really make them eat it and smile, you could expect the William the Bloody Crystal to say he was taken out of context, too. He showed up on Fox News Sunday, of course, to defend who? Well, yes, of course, the oxymoron, the junkie, Flush Flembaugh. And the Weekly Standard's Bill Kristol, who is perennially wrong, I mean, if that guy told you what day of the week it was, he'd be wrong. Hey, yeah, Bill, what day is it? It's Tuesday. No, it's not. It's Sunday, Moran. But for him, the Limbaugh thing was about the fact that Paul Rush was being discriminated against. And you know who was doing it? Mm-hmm. Them Bolshevik unions. Yes, yes, yes.
But let me just come back to something else Morris said. Oh, it's a business decision and people don't make divisive statements. I watch MSNBC sometimes. I see their talk show host there mocking liberals going on. This is Keith Olbermann. About politics, right? Conservatives are terrible. They're a bunch of jerks, blah, blah, blah. And then he's announcing the game. Nobody says, well, because he makes divisive statements, he can't announce an NFL game. I don't see that.
All right. Good point.
No, see, that's not a good point. Because it's not about whether or not Flush Flembaugh makes divisive statements. It's about whether Flush Flembaugh is a racist. Which he is. Maybe he doesn't actually believe, you know, if you really pinned him down and waterboarded him for a while, he wouldn't stick to the idea that whites are inherently better than blacks. But what he is a bigot. Pure and simple, a bigot. And it was his bigotry that stopped that bid. Not the fact that he makes divisive statements. And they're not divisive or divisive statements, Juan. They're critical statements. But once again, the right wing proves that, you know, it can dish it out, but it can't take it. So that's the straw man that Juan Williams set up. But it gets funner. Trust me.
Good point.
I don't watch them. I have no idea. I don't watch football either. But
thank God most of business isn't a monopoly, and thank God most of the workforce isn't unionized. Why could this happen? This could happen because all the NFL players are in one union, and because all the NFL owners are in one club, and their pressure could be put on them. Thank God there's more diversity in this country in terms of different industries and different businesses, and people can be controversial and can still find places where, that are willing to have them. But let me just come back to something.
Yeah, that thank God, Bill. Not having more members of unions constitutes having greater diversity in this country. Did William Crystal ever even get out of, like, junior high school? Because, see, that doesn't pass logical muster. It just doesn't. But he said it. Thank God most of the workforce isn't unionized. This happened because all the NFL players are in one union. Well, I guess William the Bloody Crystal is as happy about it as he describes. Because it is by virtue of having a non-unionized country that, you know, his side gets to continue to run roughshod over ours. So when he says, thank God most of the country isn't unionized, he's probably sincere. News Ninja Gene says, yeah, thank God for diversity so we can sell off our industry. Yeah, that worked out. Thank God we're not unionized so people can't make a living wage. Thank God we're not, most people aren't in a union in this country so that they can't have health care that they need. So that they're forced into sickening choices like another story that we've got in the stack this evening. But Rush Limbaugh is a bigot. Just like Keith Bardwell is a bigot. Just like Ulmer and who was the other creep? Ulmer and Merwin are bigots. But the fact that they don't see anything wrong with being bigots is not proof that there is nothing wrong with being a bigot. As has been repeatedly pointed out, it was 2 years ago when Flush Flimball said, my friends, the NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. There, I said it. And yet, on another program on Fox, one could hear one of their gas bags bloviating that, well, that's not a racial statement. That's a statement about the nature of violence. But that's where we are. And that's what we have to deal with. There is a new immigration plan out there, however. And it is being touted by none other than Republican Party Chairman Michael Steele. Oh, idiot, thy name is Republican. He had an interview with Univision. I know. You know, the Spanish language broadcast outfit, Univision? Michael Steele did. And in the course of that interview, much as I'm sure the Republican Party will at some point justify Merwin and Ulmer's use of that anti-Semitic slur, well, Michael Steele decided to defend the use of the term illegal alien. I can't imagine a worse place to try to make this point, but what the heck? That never slowed Michael Steele down before now, did it? He described the Republican Party as the party of assimilation. I always thought the party of assimilation was the Borg. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. No, but he came up with a plan for helping immigrants to this country succeed in America. Number two, this is after his stunning success with the GOP website and his blog called What Up, which had to be scrubbed because, again, well. Number two, I think, as I found with a lot of Hispanics, particularly those who have been here for several generations, they understand and respect the rule of law that is so important as a foundational principle of this country. Really? That only happens if you're Hispanic when you come to the United States? Otherwise, it's just pure chaos and lawlessness elsewhere? Last I checked, some of the more ugly lawlessness problems that we've had in this hemisphere, at least, have stemmed from, wait a minute, I'll be damned, Republican policies. Death squads roving around Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador. Shh, don't tell Michael Steele, but those were funded by Republicans. Yeah. But anyway, if you're Hispanic and you come to America all legal-like, then, well, you cross the border? Or you land the boat? Walk down the gangway, and the next thing that happens is that the minute you touch American soil, where before you didn't, you suddenly have an appreciation of the rule of law. Can't tell you how infuriating that is. I really can't tell you. I can't express it. But he says, I can sum it up for you this way. The party, as I said, is always the party. It's been the party of assimilation, and that is something we believe in very firmly, and basically that we should be saying is there are rules that you need to get into the country. Go to the right door, fill out the right form, have some apple pie, hum a few bars of the Star Spangled Banner, and get to work. God bless you. I think that means that begins to set us on the right road to dealing with this issue. Pie. I like pie. Go to the right door, fill out the right form, have some apple pie, hum a few bars of the Star Spangled Banner, and get to work. It's that last part that, Michael, are they going to get to work at decent wages? Are they going to get to work with the full protection of workers' compensation and unemployment compensation? Are they going to contribute while they're working to Social Security? Because, see, if we got away from this concept of illegal aliens, we might be able to start working toward that. You know, full participation in that rule of law country that you were talking about there. Michael Steele, although we were quite certain he had done it several times before, has now officially jumped the shark. He's had his Marie Antoinette moment. Have some pie. Have some apple pie. That's all we need. We just need for folks to go through the right door, fill out the right form, have some pie, and get to work at poverty wages. And God help them if they try to press for a raise in the minimum wage, because then, well, Michael Steele's not going to be so fond of you. Hum a few bars of the Star Spangled Banner. Lord knows if my father was still around, he'd be screaming at that one all by itself, saying, "You don't just hum a few bars. That's not what it's about. It's not just a song," my father had said on a number of occasions. It is not just a song. It is a symbol and a representation of who we are and what we have fought, what we have thought is fit to fight and die for. But if you just hum a few bars, that's fine with Michael Steele. Whew. Ugly, 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 ugly. Where does have some apple butter? I don't know. Me, I like peach cobbler. But I guess I'm crazy that way. Yeah, and now he's got me thinking about pie. That's never good. Though not apple pie. I like cherry pie. I like coconut cream pie. I like banana cream pie. Have some apple pie and go to work! Yeah, you get that slice of apple pie when you come through the right door and fill out the right form, but after that, what Michael Steele doesn't tell you is there's no more pie! No pie! After that, it's all work. Because Michael Steele, at the end of the day, likes him some low-wage workers. Just like William the Bloody Crystal. So as I noted, apparently there does seem to be some sort of a theme running through all of this. The conscienceless, vapid blatherings of right-wingers. The bigotry that will not go away. Bigotry that manifests itself even at this time of year in what? Yeah. Halloween costumes. Featured on the websites of Walgreens, Toys R Us, Target, Meijer, M-E-I-J-E-R, not around here, don't know, Amazon, other retailers as well, an illegal alien Halloween costume. Oh, but wait, this is a funny one, because it's an orange jumpsuit that says illegal alien and comes with a big green card that says green card. But, and here's the kicker, it comes with an alien mask. And the product pitch says, he didn't just cross a border, he crossed a galaxy. He's got his green card, but it's from another planet. Sure to get some laughs, the illegal alien adult costume includes an orange prison-style jumpsuit with illegal alien printed on the front, an alien mask, and a green card. You know why that was made? You know why it was offered for sale on the websites of places like Walgreens and Toys R Us and Target and Amazon and that outfit whose name I'm not sure how to pronounce, so I won't say it again? Because they thought someone would buy it. The thing was designed because they thought someone would buy it. And it was offered for sale because they thought someone would buy it. And they thought they'd make a fast buck on it. I mean, you know the quality of Halloween costumes, and you know the prices on them. You know, Jesus. And you can't tell me that the marketing genius who came up with this, now work with me here. You can't tell me that the marketing genius who came up with this didn't think for a minute about the fact that some people probably would put on a sombrero and paint on a handlebar mustache instead of wearing the alien mask. You can't tell me they didn't realize that. Because, of course, they did. And then somebody said, well, so what if they do? Once they buy it, it's theirs. They can do what it is they want to. But there are some things that just shouldn't be out there because they, you know, don't feed the wing nuts. Don't play into the bigotries that run as in a fetid, filthy undercurrent to everything that this country is and does. Do you remember back during the 8 long, tormented, tortured years of the Bush administration? When someone came to an Immigration and Customs Enforcement party dressed exactly like that, only without the alien mask, the space alien mask, and instead had a big fro wig or maybe a big dread wig, and George W. Bush's hand-picked head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement awarded first prize, first place, at the Halloween party to the person who showed up dressed that way? Well, the good news is, the good news is that some folks have pulled it. Let's see. Target apologized even and said, this was never intended to be part of our assortment. We are moving as quickly as possible to remove it from our website. It's no longer on the Toys R Us website either. Still no word from Amazon. Still no word from MEIJER. No word from Walgreens. Don't know if it's being offered at Wally World or not. Can't imagine that it isn't. But just as with the comment in defense of Jim DeMint that used an ethnic slur, so too some people can't understand what all the ruckus is about. Round up the usual suspects because you know, you just know who can't understand what all the ruckus is about.
This year's Halloween costume controversy. Have you seen this one? Do you have your costume yet? Well, you might want to check out this. As you can see, it's going to create quite a firestorm because it is an immigrant, an illegal immigrant. Doesn't it say that?
It's right? A space alien.
Orange jumper? Yeah, but it says illegal immigrant on the orange jumper, and then it has a space alien head.
Yeah, but Gretchen, he didn't just cross a border. He crossed a galaxy. That's
really?
Part of the promotional material.
Oh.
As you can see, wearing an orange jumpsuit. He's got a green card he's holding in his...
Holding a green card?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
And it says illegal alien.
I think it's fantastic, but you just don't even say alien anymore. You're supposed to say illegal alien. I think
immigrant.
Legally challenged.
What do we call them? Well, let me tell you.
Snuck in?
Angelica Salas for the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles thinks that this is over the line. She has asked Target, the big retailer, to remove it from their website, and Target has said yes. Unfortunately, it sold for her. It sold at all sorts of locations on the Internet and elsewhere. But do you really think there's anything the matter with that?
Not really. I mean, illegal alien tombs just sneak in the country.
It's
illegal.
A joke.
Yeah, and plus
our sense of humor.
If you don't like that, you could also just buy the Madoff mask and keep the jumpsuit and just get rid of the illegal alien.
Do you remember how many people dressed up as Sarah Palin last year?
No.
Tons.
Was there really?
Yeah, as far as making fun of somebody.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that was the number one costume. I bet you $1 gazillion last year that people did it because.
Once again, with the false equivocations. Ah, and it's, thank you, News Ninja Gene. It's Mayor. All right. Thank you. I guessed it was, but I didn't want to, I didn't know. Once again with the false equivocation, or equivalence. Well, there's no difference in mocking an entire, group of people, because people mocked, Godzilla from Wasilla last year. Jesus. And it get the Star Trek noise in the background.
That was the top.
But if you were, we're giving people two assignments now.
Yeah. If you're in this country illegally, you might feel that that is making fun of me. Email us about this. Is it funny or is it foul? friends@foxnews.com.
And if you're here illegally, go to your local police station and tell them how outraged you are because you're an illegal alien and this costume offends you. Or...
But you can't explain it to a Repiglican or a bigot because they see no harm in their bigotry. I know that may be an overly simple statement, but it's really more complex than it sounds. You can't explain it. Look, you couldn't explain this. You couldn't explain this, why it was wrong to Archie Bunker either. And that's what you've got at Fox. You've got an entire network run by and for America's Archie Bunker class. People who are happy with the stereotypes and the bigotries. You know, what? Rather than saying that this would have been there's nothing wrong with this because people dressed up like Sarah Palin. Let's back up a notch and talk about the things that you could not get away with now. You could not have for sale on a website an Aunt Jemima costume or a lawn jockey costume because it is offensive not to one person like Sarah Palin. It's not mocking a person because of who the person is. It's mocking people because of the accident of their birth. It's mocking a group. It is dehumanization. It is group hatred. It's the kind of thing that, honest to God, leads to killing. Because before you can freely kill, you must openly dehumanize. And it's part of the... And stereotypes are, at their base level, efforts at dehumanization. What if Target was selling a drunken Irishman costume? Would Fox find that funny? Come on, America, where's your sense of humor? This isn't humorous. It isn't funny. America hasn't lost our sense of humor. We've simply figured out that there are some things that were politely giggled at in the past that just aren't funny anymore and never were. But they were laughed at because they were a societal, because the bigotry itself was a societal norm. This in from Michael, Kid A in the chat room. Bob, I'm a white guy. White as can be so far as I can tell, but Michael Steele telling brown folk to have some pie and get to work? I know he was talking to the brown folk, not the black folk, but my God! Is it okay now if even us white liberals call Steele what he is? The house Negro for the Republican plantation? I mean, party? I mean, come on! Have some pie, hum a few bars, and get to work? Come on, he's begging for it! P.S. You were right, Meyer. At least around here, not mayor. Maybe it varies by region. We have him in Ohio. Nicer than a Walmart, not quite as clean as a Target. I love the education that I get on this program. How about Rupert Murdoch as a koala bear, says Marty? How would Fox take that? Look, Fox doesn't like it by virtue of the fact that the White House has, even David Axelrod came out and did not leave Anita Dunn flapping in the breeze. He said they're not a real news organization. That's twice they've said it. Somebody's going to have to sue sooner or later. On the few bars of the Star Spangled Banner, have some pie and get to work. You know, that's got some wheels turning in what passes for my tiny mind. Somehow it seems like there's something back there that I haven't quite figured it out yet. So we'll wrap this hour up, and we'll start the next hour in a couple of minutes after a brief break. A little something sent along by John Fox for our pal Sparky in the chat room, and sort of by extension also a little bit early, but for the horn itself. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Oh, like I said, thank God it's Monday. Having been gone on Friday, the week was kind of squirrely. We were a long time getting to Monday, trust me. And I realize now what it was that I was thinking about, and I bet you thought about it before even I did. And I'm going right back to the phones. And you know the number, of course. Jump in. Let's get the conversation started. 877-443-2366. 877-4-HEAD-ON. Or locally, on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Easy, easy, easy. And I'm just trying to see here if this is going to go, because this was what I was thinking about in the when Michael mentioned the business about it's not gonna. Okay, I'm missing a codec. Darn it. The scene from, I can tell you now, the scene from Blazing Saddles, when they're out there working on the railroad, Slim Pickens and the section bosses. How about old Song? You know, Camp Town Races. The Camp Town Races. And then breaks into a spirited rendition of I Get a Kick Out of You. It would have been fun if I'd been able to cue it up, but this is the computer that I'm still finishing with, so never mind. Now, let's go to the phones and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I had a few little things I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Well, I'll do the mundane one first. Liz is back. On The View.
Oh, yes?
From having her third baby. But it's been really, really boring. They've hardly talked about anything political in, I say, 2 or 3 weeks now, at least 2 weeks, except for David Letterman and the peace, Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
And they had a substitute on there. In the morning, they were talking about the Nobel Peace Prize. Believe me, I'd rather have Elizabeth than her.
That bad, huh?
Yeah, she was one that Barbara kept saying they almost chose her to be on there. And she is real, you know, she was talking about his Obama, you know, didn't deserve it. She said, I think we all agree that he didn't deserve that. And they said, well, no, you know, because Barbara was saying she thought it was a good thing. Country that he got the Nobel Peace Prize. But she was talking about his view on abortion and all, and she's having like her fourth or fifth baby, maybe her sixth baby, I don't know, in a row. But, She wasn't a blonde. She was a nice-looking, dark-haired lady, but anyway. And then today, the only thing I heard them talking about is there's something about, you know, Rush blaming us for him losing.
Right, because nothing
can...
Because that personal responsibility that he preaches on doesn't apply to him.
Well, would say something about Elizabeth. She did say that, you know, after him saying what he did about some of the players and all, she said maybe that's the real reason. She knew McNabb and all that. You know, her husband was a football player. I guess she knew. Anyway, she's back.
Right.
But it's been really boring. It's been very boring. You know, I don't know whether they were told to cut back or what. Anyway.
Well, or maybe things are just a little bit slow right now. I mean, that does happen.
There was a lot of things that they could have talked about. They never talked about Grayson. And, you know, there's just a lot of things they could have talked about, I think. But anyway. But anyhow, they did talk about the, about, you know, Obama and them talking about Fox News. And, Elizabeth did say that, she didn't think it was them telling people not to listen. They said, well, that's not what she told them. That made that told them. They were just saying that they didn't consider it to be a news source. And that kind of shut her up. But one day her brother was on there, and he's a singer. He actually is a good singer. And they asked him, was he right wing? He said, no. He said, our family doesn't know what happened with Elizabeth. So she got that on her own. That's what he said.
Well, what, you remember Ari Fleischer?
Yeah.
And when he said that, he said, my parents are good Democrats, and for me to become a Republican was just only slightly better than me becoming a drug dealer.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have to hear him say that, but I knew they were supposed to be Democrats. I think his brother's a Republican, too. I bet they think, where did we go wrong? Because he's really a jerk. But then I wanted to talk about a congressional hearing I saw on C-SPAN, you know, with the congressman, with the representatives. And it was, I saw where these three different people were talking about their experiences with their insurance companies. Especially private ones, you know, non-work. And one of them, she had breast cancer when she was 27. And, of course, she was telling about what all she went through, and now she's trying to pay back. She's doing really good now. She said now she's trying to pay back her bills at $1,500 a month. She said, if I don't die, I'll keep paying on them. And then there was the man whose daughter, they thought she had the flu and she just never got better, and they got her to the hospital. She went into a coma. She was going to have a liver transplant, and the insurance company just did a number on them about that. But they finally got it through. And then there was another one where his baby was born hemophiliac. And that is, boy, that costs a ton of money.
Oh.
And he telling about all that. But what was funny to me, you know, they've got at least two Republican doctors on there really, you know how they are doing. You know, they're like, oh, we do this, we know that. Well, it's kind of like they were kind of like, didn't know what to say. But, you know, there's one from Georgia, he's a GYN.
Oh, yeah, which one?
Well, we're trying to help people, too, you know. And anyway, then there's another one. I think he's from Texas. He's a heavyset guy. And he said, well, in our clinic, we let people pay back on time, you know, not all. Well, maybe he does. But, you know, a lot of places. Now, my son had through a trick of circumstance, the place that was supposed to be paying for him, they had dropped him, and he didn't know it, and he had a MRI that was, do you know anything about where they do the, it's not just a plain MRI, but they do the imaging, or you have to take...
contrast?
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it costs, you know, a ton of money. I mean, the both of them do, but that one really does. No insurance. So he sent them a payment, and they didn't even contact him. They just turned over the credit bureau. And you never could talk to them. This was at a hospital. They never answered the phone. And I said, just to heck with them, you know. And then there would be these different credit places would call about it, wanting them to pay, you know, big bucks on it. And when I would talk to him, I said, you know, I said, he can't pay like that. He pay minimum. He's got all these other places to pay. And every time they would change, they would try to get another credit company to call, credit collection to call. This is what the one guy told me. He said, if we can't get it, they'll just turn it over to somebody else and they'll try to get more. They're just trying to get a bigger sum at one time. So that's just baloney that you can just go and, you know, people say, well, you know, if you pay for it, you know, pay something. I mean, they didn't even give my son a month on this one. But I just thought that was sort of humorous, those daughters kind of sitting there, you know, like, well, what do we say now? What can they say? Because these people were dynamic. They were telling about the couple, the man, the two married men, the men that were, you know, they were told about they needed to get a divorce, you know, so they could get more money. You've heard that before.
Yes, yeah.
You know, with Medicaid.
Right. Family guy, values at work.
Yeah, and the one guy lived in Colorado talking about family values. And he said the Medicaid system out there was very, very difficult to get in. And the one guy, he had to quit making the one that had the liver transplant. He had to cut down on what he was making. And the other one, he had to go up in business for himself so he could get, like, group insurance. And then they all suffered because his son, that's the one, him affiliated baby,
mm-hmm.
And his son it was so expensive till the other people that worked for him were suffering because their insurance wasn't paying that much. And one man, and he said they were really wonderful about it, too. And he said one man cut his leg, and he had a friend of his to sew it up for him. He couldn't afford, you know, to go to the emergency room. And so, anyway, that's what I wanted to say about that.
Okay.
And then I wanted to ask you a question I've been thinking about.
All right.
About the people that are doing the workers that are working on the mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always hear about, well, they ask if what state you come from.
Right, yeah, sure. Where are you from?
I wonder what state they're from. You know, are they from West Virginia? If not,
in some instances they're not, but most particularly because of what's been done to those communities that they live around. Mostly, they're not from those communities, so the response is, you know, where are you from? Well, no, where are you from? Where do you live in this community that you're destroying? Or do you live a county over and 50 miles away where you don't have to deal with the mess you make?
That's why I was asking that. I was wondering if they care about what's going to happen to their children. If they are from there, if they live...
Well, they don't know that. Now, see, they don't believe any of that.
Well... If they live a county over, there's one day they're going to face it, whether they believe in it or not. I probably agree with you, but it'd be interesting to see where these people are from, if they came in to do the work or if they're natives.
Well, generally speaking, I mean, we know about a bunch of them. They live over about 30, 50 miles away from where they go to work every morning.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it is with most of these folks. They don't live near the hell that they create.
Yeah.
And so consequently they don't have to deal with the immediate consequences. Now, things like mercury toxicity and mercury buildup in human body systems, they got to deal with it. They're doing it to their children just as sure as God made little green apples, Juanita. And frankly, that's the part of the uplifting part of this is, you know, we're not in this struggle for ourselves.
Yeah.
We're in this struggle for everybody in this state, everybody in this nation, and everybody on this planet.
Yeah.
Because you know, mercury doesn't check your credentials before it gets into your system.
No.
And as I, you know, I had that opportunity to speak this weekend, and one of the things I was trying to point out is that, you know, that really horrifying statistic that says that everybody, every woman of childbearing age at this point has... Every woman of childbearing age at this point has enough mercury in her system to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in any child she bears.
Yeah.
Okay? But the trick is, Juanita, that's nothing new. That's been going on as long as we've been burning coal. I was born with a 10-point IQ deficit. So was everybody listening to this program.
Well, you know, I've been hearing about the mercury is for several years. And, you know, one thing they were talking about, the first thing I heard about it was in tuna fish.
Sure. And you know how...
And they came out and said, oh, well, that wouldn't hurt you. That, you know, a little bit of mercury would be good for you.
Well, once in a while, no, it takes a long time to build up. But that's the thing. It's been at us so long that it has built up significantly in all of us. And, you know, it's not just mercury. I remember that... that study that came out several years ago, where they tested, the breast milk of mothers in New Jersey and Arizona and California and Wisconsin and Florida and all over the country, and all of them had elements of rocket fuel in their mother's milk.
Wow. Well, it just, you know, there's just no telling what we're breathing in or eating, definitely eating. And all this, you know, now they got this thing about, I've heard a lot of Republicans say it, as well as Democrats, that we need to learn how to eat. Well, if most of the food is not raised right, you can't do it.
Yeah, there's more to being raised right than just youngins.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, I kind of know what you're the best thing to eat. Of course, sometimes you have to eat what you can get. You know, a lot of times that happens. But the thing is that, you know, it's just, I don't know.
Well, let me give you an example. Talking about food, this will be our food segment.
We always go to food, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We're Southern people. We can't help it. But I've noticed some new Wendy's ads in the last couple of days. On the radio and on the television.
Yeah.
And it says, Wendy's hamburgers are always fresh, never frozen, and they're made from 100% North American beef.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all...
Well, wait,
because here's the fun part. First of all, I would think that would get the teabaggers real upset. And I wish I could plant that little seed in teabagger land because I just love watching them have conniptions. Why can't you say American? What's wrong with saying it's American beef?
Oh,
what's wrong?
America.
Don't Wendy's love America? Say it's American beef.
You're kidding.
No. I mean,
I thought about it.
Wouldn't you love to hear them start teabagging on that?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's the trick. When you say North American beef, what you're actually saying is the United States of America, Canada, or Mexico.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And just remember, the swine flu.
Yeah.
Guaranteed 100, coming from 100% North American swine. because the swine flu was born in one of those filthy lagoons, they call them, at a hog farm and kill plant in Mexico, because Mexico is North America too.
Yeah, yes it is. That's for sure.
So what they're saying is, when you buy a hamburger at Wendy's, you're going to get you some nice Mexican beef where they ain't got inspection for nothing. And we moved our operations there to get the EPA and the FDA off our butts.
Yeah.
And pay some low wages. Here's some pie. Hum the national anthem and get to work. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I sure do. That makes a lot of sense.
And because the minute I heard that North American, I went, because see, if it was Merkin, they'd say Merkin, but it ain't.
Yeah, that's right. Wow.
Just further proof that they're trying to, and you know what? Them cattle probably come up on that NAFTA highway. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
That NAFTA super highway they's a building.
Yeah.
Yep. Probably come up on that.
Well, can I be nosy and ask you where you were speaking?
Yeah, I was speaking at the University of North Carolina.
Oh.
Speaking to Carolina's Power Shift. And it was being hosted at the University of North Carolina. And so that's where I was.
I hope you got some remuneration.
No, they just covered costs. Remember, our side doesn't pay. But they were kind enough to cover our costs, cover my costs and get
well,
it down.
Well, yeah, I guess that does help. That was another thing I was thinking. You need to get on a speaking tour, you know, a la Sarah Palin.
I do. Maybe I could go speak to some businessmen in Hong Kong. I guarantee I could be just as well. I don't have the legs.
You might.
And I can't I can't play the flute. I can barely play Smoke on the Water on my guitar anymore.
Well, you know, you were talking about the Halloween costumes, and they were talking about people making fun of Sarah Palin by wearing costumes. I'm sure as many people that think she's just this angel on legs, I'm sure that a lot of them dressed the little girls like her and just thought she was, it was a wonderful thing. I don't think they were making fun of her.
I will never forget the night that Agnes came in here with her hair done up in a Jesus Psyche knot and little funky glasses on. And I mean, I looked at her out of the corner of my eye and went,
whew! I remember that. I forgot about it.
Scared me out of 5 years' growth.
Oh, boy.
Felt like hollering, don't shoot, honey.
Well, I know you couldn't make what she makes, but you should. But, you know, even if you could do something once a month and get paid for it, it would be
And again, it's non-remunerative, but I am proud to announce that Guy James and I will be working together again very soon. We are heading to Washington, D.C.
Well, hooray.
We will be there for a conference sponsored by the Campaign for America's Future on October the 29th. And we will broadcast those proceedings live via the Horns infrastructure. And we'll probably do a show in our own right.
All right. Well, is he going to be back on tomorrow?
He is going to be back on tomorrow.
Good.
Hot diggity. I know he's about fit to bust.
I'm sure he is after all this time. Okay, well, Bob, I'll let you go. I think I've said my piece.
Okay, Juanita, good hearing from you.
You too.
You take
good
care.
Evening.
All right.
Night-night.
Bye now. And just a little addendum before we go on to other calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck and don't do the toll-free thing, it's 304-658-3333. Never called the program? Always been a listener and not a caller? You know what? It's not going to be. It's not going to get any easier to do than a conversation radio, because there's no hurry. Okay, love first time callers. I was going to mention something in the course of Juanita's discussing the horror stories that people are put through. This latest one is a real. I don't know how you hear something like this and not begin to cry. I just reading this and the tears began running down my face. It's just, and you know, it wasn't like Glenn Beck where I had a little bit of Vicks Vapor Rub or mentholatum under my eyes to really get me watering up real good. This story the man's name is Bill Caudill. And he has a wife named Michelle. And what a damn tragedy this is. First of all, up in Wisconsin where they live, Bill was laid off from his job at a plastics company back in March of this year. He had health care. Bill and Michelle did, because of his work. But once he was laid off, he lost his health care. And that's tough enough. But on top of it, Bill's wife, Michelle, is also an ovarian cancer patient, which is an aggressive cancer, and has to be treated. He didn't have any health care. And he spent months, Bill Caudill did, looking for work. He's not a young guy. But finally, in an act of desperation, he did the only thing he could. He joined the Army. To get health care for his wife. Up until 2005, he was too old to join the Army, but in 2005, the age limit for enlistment got bumped up from 35 to 40 because the Bush administration couldn't find anybody to sign up for their wars of choice in Iraq and Afghanistan. Then, a year later in 2006, it went up to 42. Suddenly, Bill Caudill qualified to join the Army. So Bill Caudill is going to have health care for his wife, Michelle. But Michelle is going to fight that cancer by herself. What a devilish damn choice to have to make. Let your wife go without health care and succumb to ovarian cancer, or join the military, leave her to fight it by herself, and go and run the risk of being killed in your own right. He's trying to put a brave face on it. His mama said, 70% of the reason is for the insurance. I've always, his mother, Marguerite Himmler, said, he told me, I've always wanted to do something for my country, and I have to help Michelle. Till death do us part, huh? The choices these evil right-wing, repig-licking bastards compel us to are a crime. Where are their family values? Where are those right-wing family values when a family's getting busted up and a man has to risk his life with military service when he's too old to serve in the first place? And his wife has to deal with the effects of ovarian cancer alone. You know, when I've got the sniffles and we go to the doctor, I ask Agnes to go with me, because when you're sitting there trying to talk to the meds, you want somebody, you want a second person sitting there listening just in case you get something wrong, because it can all get kind of fuzzy after a while. But here we sit, the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't offer comprehensive health coverage to every one of our citizens. I suppose George Bush would describe that as uniquely American. And in that case, he would be correct. Sweet Jesus. Dear God. Breathtaking, isn't it? Kinda is.
Oh,
about 16 minutes before the hour, and we're going to go immediately back to the phones. On the line with us right now is Lorella Scarborough, and I wanted to make sure that you got to hear a little bit about this today. Big doings up out of the coal fields today here in Appalachia, as a group of residents of the Coal River Valley visited the office of Governor Joe Manchin to deliver a letter. Because even as we know that we are beginning to win this fight, the pressure is being ramped up by the coal companies, and that was the cause of the visit to the governor's mansion. Lorella was there. Lorella is the community organizer of the Coal River Wind Project. Are you there, Lorella?
I am here.
Okay, great. You were in Charleston today delivering a letter to Governor Manchin. Why?
Well, we were there today, and there were several, quite a few coal field residents that were there also, because we are very, very concerned about what's going on Coal River Mountain. The very western end of Coal River Mountain in the Beetree area, they are beginning to move coal. And, if they continue to move coal, we of course are going to lose wind potential. And, we had asked the governor to declare a state of emergency, stop the activity on Coal River Mountain, and to rescind the permits that have been issued by the State Department of Environmental Protection. There are no federal permits that have been issued on that mountain. These are just state permits.
Can they go forward without the federal permits?
Well, what they did in this particular section was just about 2 years ago, when they saw that they weren't going to get their 404 permits, their federal permits. Those are the ones that are traditionally issued by the Army Corps, and we've had them held up in litigation for a couple of years. So what they did was they revised this particular permit, and they took out a valley field, which is what's contained in a 404 permit. We called that a significant revision. The coal company said it was not, and if it were a significant revision, then of course that would allow citizens' input. Coal company said it wasn't. We took them before the Office of Surface Mining, and Office of Surface Mining, of course, agreed with coal company, said it was not a significant revision, so they could go forward. They do not have a valley fill in this permit. They because they took it out, and you know, my concern first of all is where they're putting their waste, because in order to blast. And they have to have a place to put their waste. But we are told by a representative from the Department of Environmental Protection that they are moving coal.
And blasting goes with that, right?
Well, you would think so.
Now, and just to create a little bit more perspective, this permit is part of Coal River Mountain. And it would have a direct impact on the ability of the Coal River Wind Project to go forward, correct?
It absolutely would. You know, as they move forward on Beetree, the Coal River Mountain permits are three permits, which total 6,600 acres. And they're working in a very, very small portion of the very western permit, which is the Beetree permit. It's Beetree, Eagle 2, and Eagle 3. My property borders, Coal River Mountain borders, the Eagle 2 permit. They are working in a very small area of the Beetree permit, and it will impact some of the wind potential on this mountain.
So,
it doesn't state all of it, but it certainly will impact some of the wind potential.
I'm looking at a photograph here of you and Chuck Nelson. Chuck was on the program last week talking about the nastiness at the Army Corps debacle down in Charleston last Tuesday night. You actually got Governor Manchin, it was kind of like Groundhog Day in Charleston, wasn't it? You got Governor Manchin to come out and speak to you.
It was exactly like that, because what happened was we went in, we asked to speak to the governor. We were told that he, of course, was in a meeting, and we asked how long he would be in a meeting, and, of course, I don't know. And so one of his representatives came out, and he kind of panned the room a little bit, looked around, and apparently, you know, deducted that we didn't appear to be dangerous people, so he went back through the doors, back to where the governor's office was, and momentarily the governor appeared.
And, you know, I'm looking at the photo. There's a lot of people in the room.
There are a lot of people in the room.
And there was a letter delivered based on the concerns about the blasting on the Bee Tree permit on Coal River Mountain. How did Governor Manchin respond?
Well, Governor Manchin responded in his traditional response to just about everything that we take to him. He said there's a process. And, you know, we have heard there's a process, you know, every time we talk to him. And so finally, you know, I informed him that we had been working on this project. Us people locally all across the state and all across the nation have been working on this project for about 19 months. We were pretty certain that we had gone through the process, and since he feels as though we hadn't, what is the process?
Answer?
And his answer was exactly, you know, what we've gone through. You know, first you have to apply for a permit, and then you get a permit, a DEP permit, and then you go for the Army Corps permit. We've done all that. And, I mean, there's no Army Corps permits yet, but the process that he was speaking about, as far as this operation has gone, we've certainly gone through that. So his standard operating answer of, you know, there's a process, certainly doesn't hold any water here, because we've worked our way through the process, and still they have started moving coal on Coal River Mountain. Now, we did not specify blasting today. We just informed him that they were moving coal. They are clearing. They've been clear-cutting, and they are moving part of the mountain, and they are moving coal.
And, of course, the clear-cutting by itself means imminent danger to anybody living at the foot of that mountain.
It absolutely does. There are people who live on that side of the mountain that, of course, are in danger. And, you know, we have people from that side of the mountain standing in his office today. People who have, you know, lived under mountain top removal, you know, all of their life. And, you know, one of those community residents literally was brought to tears today. She's 57 years old. And that's her home, and she feels very, very threatened, and she was brought to tears.
And, of course, just to put this in a little bit of topographical perspective, part of this permit abuts the what's called the Brushy Fork Sludge Impoundment, right?
It certainly does, and that's one of the things that we discussed with the governor today, is our concern, because the coal company eventually plans to do, and we're concerned about how quickly this could happen, is to start blasting within 200 feet of the face of the largest toxic in the world. That's the Brushy Fork impoundment, and the coal company thinks it's a pretty good idea to start blasting there, and apparently, you know, a few other people do too, if they're allowed to go forward. What's really, really bad about that is this 9 billion gallon toxic sludge dam is an earthen dam. The face of this dam is an earthen dam. And what really, really concerns us is the activity that has actually happened underneath this 9 billion gallons. And for many, many years, this mountain has been honeycombed with traditional room and pillar coal mining. The pillars that hold this 9 billion gallons up are cracked. Some of the pillars are cracked, and we are concerned that if and when they are allowed to start blasting within 200 feet of Brushy Fork, that it, you know, it's not a matter of if, but, you know, a question of when, it will literally blow out of there. The pillars will crack, it will fall through and blow out. And the first thing in line at the mouth of Marfork Holler, if Brushy Fork blows out, of course, is our Head Start Center, our Senior Center, and our State Police Station. That's where it's going to hit first.
Jesus. And when we talk about the Brushy Fork impoundment, that's 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste?
It's 9 billion, I think, is the number.
Okay, but it's permitted for 9.8.
Yeah.
At that point, I think the difference between 9 and 9.8 billion, Lorella,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how you measure that in the number of extra people killed, but when the thing goes. But you know, that it can't be emphasized enough. That mountain is undermined.
It is. It absolutely is. And that's according to the coal industry and the DEP's own information. It absolutely is.
And, of course, has there already been sludge injection there as well?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. We're concerned about that as we speak.
And just, again, because, you know, this stuff's very real to you and me and others here in West Virginia, but it may be hard to fathom for folks outside the region. If that sludge dam gives way, if that rock and dirt dam gives way, a wall of water.
No water. No, it's not water.
Well, sludge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. A wall of sludge 50 feet high, that's five stories high, would almost immediately hit Whitesville, which is, it's a town. And the estimates are that it would kill at least 998 people.
Very close to 1,000 people, yes, immediately.
And so he just keeps saying it's a process, it's a process?
Yes, he does. One of the terms that he used today, which was extremely upsetting to me, is the governor of the state of West Virginia apparently has decided that this is an extractive state. You know, that's the term he used today, as opposed to the mountain state. And I made sure that I informed him that West Virginia is a mountain state. It's not an extractive state. And if it's necessary, and it is, for us to extract energy, then we have plenty of sun and wind to extract.
It does shine here, and it does blow here.
And it does blow very well on Coal River Mountain, according to wind feasibility studies that we've had done.
That's been proven. I got to think he's having a bad night, Lorella. But is there anything? I mean, what do you know? What kind of power does the governor of West Virginia have to stop it? Or to mitigate it, or, you know, he's the governor. You would think there would be some power there.
Well, the governor of the state of West Virginia, the governor of any state, of course, head of the executive branch for the whole state. And as the head of the executive branch, of course, he's the head of the DEP. You know, he has power over the Department of Environmental Protection. And that's one of the things that we reminded him of today, that, you know, he has that power and he has the power to rescind these permits. He said that he certainly did not, you know, that, you know, he appointed these people, but he didn't have the power to do that. And we would disagree with him on that. We believe he does have the power to rescind the permits or declare eminent domain on that mountain, you know, whatever it would take in order to make sure that they don't do any more destruction. And people on both sides of that mountain, this mountain sits between two state routes, State Route 1 and State Route 3. And, you know, whether you believe it or not, or regardless of the coal industry's misinformation that they put out there, there are lots and lots of living, breathing human beings that live on both sides of that mountain. And we asked the governor, you know, to rescind the permits, you know, to make sure that the destruction that's going on Coal River Mountain does not go any farther. He assured us that he didn't have that power. We are in the process of researching and to determine, you know, to actually find the law that gives him that power. And so we have people that are researching that as we speak.
And there were, of course, arrests at this this meeting as well, right?
There were several very brave young people made the decision that they were going to sit there until the governor decided to halt the destruction on Coal River Mountain. And so he informed them that they would be waiting there for a very long time. And they sat there from the time when we were in there, which was between 12 and 1, until 5 o'clock, and then they were arrested at 5 o'clock. The Capitol closes, I think, at 7. So they were arrested. There were 7 of them.
Why arrest them at 5 and not 7? I mean, at that point, it would seem to me that they were they being peaceful?
They were not. They were, I mean, peaceful. Yes, they were peaceful. It's just, I guess they wanted to have time to make sure that they, you know, cleared them all out and got them out of there before the doors were actually to be locked. I don't know. Maybe he had a dinner date or something. I don't know. But they told him that, you know, they would be done until 5 o'clock, and then at 5 o'clock they would take action, and they did.
Mercy. Well, it took a lot of guts for everybody to show up there. There's no doubt about that.
Well, it did. And, you know, we did have a face-to-face with the governor for all the good that did. Like I said, we are concerned that he's still going to sit on his hands. When we asked him to rescind the permits, he informed us that, you know, he did not get involved in the permitting process. Well, that seems really, really strange to us because a lot of us that were there are well aware of the fact that he's burned a blazing trail from Charleston, West Virginia to D.C. in order to get involved
in the process
that the Environmental Protection Agency is doing as we speak.
Yeah, because, you know, when we go to visit the Council on Environmental Quality, for instance, we meet with a staffer.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor Manchin has not hesitated in the least to use taxpayer money to fly up there. And by golly, if he doesn't meet with the head of the organization, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yes, I'm pretty sure he does. And he has been there, according to our information, quite a few times this year. You know, but yet he would stand in our Capitol today and tell us that he doesn't get involved in the permitting process. And I guess he really thinks we believe that.
Well,
yeah,
if he's not getting involved in the permitting process, then why is he out there making public speeches saying that the EPA is trying to take away people's jobs?
Well, apparently he is getting involved in the process.
So what he means is he doesn't get involved in the permitting process on behalf of people who live and are affected by mountaintop removal sites. That's
exactly
what he means.
That's exactly what he means. He only gets involved in the process when it comes to industry, big business, in the state of West Virginia. You know, we appeal to him on the position of jobs, you know, jobs forever as opposed to temporary. And, you know, he assured us that, you know, he was advocating. I informed him that, you know, he has a responsibility to advocate for jobs in the coal field, long-term sustainable jobs. And, he assured us that that was what he was doing. I said, in the coal field.
Answer?
Well, yes, of course he is. Of course, we don't see the evidence of that. Living in the coal fields, we certainly don't see the evidence of that. He's very, very talented and seasoned.
Those are some words you could use, yes.
Right. There's a few others we could put with that. But
slippery. Slippery comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to be nasty here, but in other words, he gave you the old political brush off.
He did. He absolutely did.
What's next?
Well, I'm not sure what's next. You know, we have a few options, you know, at hand. We also did inform his lawyers and his aides there that, you know, there were a lot of death threats going around in the coal fields. They're even as brazen enough to publish them in a letter to the editor in the local newspaper.
Now we've even got civil rights era style refusal to provide accommodation to people in public restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that happened last Thursday, I think it was, in Madison, West Virginia. And one of those young people that they refused to serve happened to be a person of color.
Sweet Jesus. Well, and I know another one of those people that they refused to serve has already written a story about it that is going around up in Connecticut. There was a journalist in the group.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, what, 19 people?
That they refused to serve? I'm not sure.
No, I think 18, 19, something like that.
Yeah.
I got it in an email from Chuck Nelson, who was there. And honest to God, Lorella, I read it and my mouth hung open. I could not believe what I was reading, as if there was some. And I know it points me out as some sort of a Pollyanna, I suppose. But I could not believe what my eyes were taking in.
Well, can you believe the other things that are happening? You know, citizens denied the right to speak at public hearings. Now, this is a United States Army Corps hearing. This is federal hearing, and citizens were not allowed to speak. Or that, let me say that they were.
In answer to your question, yes, I can believe it because, you know, I've seen some of it. But it doesn't take away the horrifying, time traveling, going backwards instead of forward. But that's where the mountaintop removal industry is, isn't it? They're fostering a spirit of division and discrimination in this state. Or so it would appear, because those 700 or more who showed up at the Charleston Kanawha Civic Center last Tuesday didn't just appear out of nowhere. They were told to be there. And as a consequence, it seems like this is happening with the active participation of the coal companies.
Well, it is. You know, they were told to be there, and they were told to be there to protect their jobs. And they were told to show up in their strikes. They were told that they could have the day off the day after, you know, if they chose to be there. And they were encouraged to show up in force and make sure they did everything that they could to protect their jobs. Now, unfortunately, I was ill last Tuesday and couldn't make the hearing. But when I saw, you know, the videos and the statements of the people, my friends who were there, and I would have been there had I not been ill, I was outraged. I mean, I was literally outraged. People were spit on. People were shoved. People were called horrible names. People were denied access to the building. And the police, you know, the police did nothing to protect them. I mean, the police actually walked a small group to the door, opened the door, and told them to, you know, go, and said you're on your own with an angry mob waiting outside. There was no protection there. The Corps of Engineers did not control that meeting. The police who were there, the Charleston police who were there, did not control the crowd. The people who were there who by our Constitution have the right, you know, to speak, you know, about what's wrong in their lives and what they want to change, you know, this, bear in mind, this is the United States Army Corps of Engineering. And people were, when they would walk to the microphone, say who they were, and attempt to speak against the thing that's dramatically impacting their lives, they were screaming and yelling and name-calling and booing and, you know, everything that they could to make sure that those people weren't heard. And the Army Corps of Engineers, the panel that was in charge of this hearing, did not take them to the crowd. You know, the people who were out of control should have been removed one by one or two or ten. They should have been removed so everybody had a right to voice their opinion that night. They were not. And then the representative from the Army Corps after this hearing has the nerve to say that, you know, things were handled very well at that hearing. Things were handled very well if you were there in orange stripes, but the citizens whose lives are impacted every day certainly did not have an opportunity to speak about something that affects their lives every day.
And I found out later that the reason that there's only a little bit of audio coming out of that meeting, Lorella, is because people were told going in that it could not be videoed.
They took their cameras. They took their cameras as they went in. But yet, there was a guy sitting on the front row who was there with the West Virginia Coal Association and their representative who had a camera. And every time a coal field resident or someone stepped to the microphone that was speaking against mountaintop removal, he turned and snapped a picture of everyone that dared oppose. Wonder why he would do something like that. He took a picture of everybody that stepped to the mic to speak against mountaintop removal. He was allowed to have a camera in there, but the residents, the coal field residents, whose lives are being threatened, who were threatened while they were there, who were pushed and shoved and spit upon, you know, were not allowed a camera so they could actually get pictures or record anything that happened inside there.
Well, I suppose it's always darkest before the dawn. But
wrong. I think there's something wrong with this picture, something very, very wrong. And as time goes on this year, they get angrier and they get more aggressive. The more they get away with, the more they do the next time. And I'm very, very concerned about the possibility that they are not going to stop until somebody's bleeding in the street.
Oh, I've said it before. They want to kill somebody, Lorella. They really do.
They certainly do. And you know, on June 23rd, when 30 of us were arrested, you know, had we approached the line to try to go on the property, actually go on the property of the coal company that day, they were given orders to me that they hit us fast, hard, and continuous with everything they had. They were given orders.
Sweet, dear God. I mean, and I saw that. Well, as you know, Lorella, I was down in North Carolina this past weekend, and one of the things that I said to those assembled wonderful young people was, I said, I know we talk about environmentalism, but I am begging you to understand that this is a human rights issue. When people are refused accommodations, when people are subjected to physical harassment, when people are threatened in their lives, their homes, their well-being, it's a human rights issue. There's certainly, you know, this is very much an environmental issue, certainly, absolutely. But at the end of the day, the people being abused are human beings, and they're being abused because of who they are and where they live. How's it not a human rights issue? I mean, when this accommodation stuff and free speech and essential equal protection of the laws, due process, those are all civil rights. And the only thing, outside of a corporation, the only thing that has civil rights are human beings. I don't know, like you, I don't know what the next step is, Lorella. But I know that it is getting worse, and it's not getting dangerous. It got dangerous a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, it did. You know, especially for us that would dare speak out. You know, the coal industry in the state of West Virginia is very accustomed to threatening and intimidating and bullying and getting what they want. I mean, they do that. They run rampant in this state, and that's just the way they do things. It's like we're back in the 1920s again. We're back in the Cold Wars, and the only thing that's left is them, you know, dragging out their revolvers and shooting whoever dares disagree with them. And I'm not so sure that they're very far away from that. You know, because like I said, you can tell when you look in their eyes that they want blood. You know, and we are committed, you know, we are committed to acts of nonviolent civil disobedience. You know, that's the platform that we stand on. And they certainly are taking advantage of that because, you know, the more that they do to us, the more they torment us and bully us and shove us and spit on us, and we don't respond, the more aggressive they get. You know, it's like if you get away, you know, you give an inch to take a mile. You know, they get away with a little thing, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's why, you know, we're really, really concerned about the escalation that's going on here because it is escalating very, very. I'm concerned about, you know, what happens next because they have been allowed when the Charleston police allowed them to act like that, when the United States Army Corps of Engineers allowed them to treat people like that, when the West Virginia State Police allowed them to treat us like that on June 23rd at Marsh Fork Elementary School, you know, when they are allowed to continue to bully us and abuse us and threaten us, I'm very, very concerned at what point are the powers that be to make sure that there's an end to it. Are the state police and the city police, is our governor waiting until a coalfield resident actually dies before he does something? I think he is.
And I guess
our congressman waiting until somebody dies before they do something? I think they are.
I don't think you can reach any other logical conclusion, Lorella. And I guess that's the next question to ask is, you know, are you waiting till someone gets killed? And if that's the case, why? Because I'm not going to sit here and speak for them.
Well, you know, it's like, Bob, we have to look around our neighbors. We have to look at our friends and our neighbors and our family and try to figure out who it's going to be. Who it's going to be. That's where we're at.
And that's a hell of a question to try to answer. And I've had some, well, you know, I've had some sleepless nights wondering myself, you know, who, because I love these people. They're my neighbors, they're my friends, they're my colleagues, my comrades, yours too. And I can't find any one of them that deserves to die at the hands of the coal mob.
For a greater profit margin. You know, it's not for coal, and it's not for energy. Because, you know, as we told the governor today, and he's enormously surprised, we're not standing here in opposition to coal. I am, and the majority of the people there today who I chose to speak for are 100% against mountaintop removal and the destruction of our community. That's what we're against. We are also against using coal as an energy source. With the technology today, we don't have to burn coal to get energy and put mercury and all the other things into the air and continue killing us and killing our babies and our children and our grandchildren. With the technology that we have, we need to start transitioning to renewable energy. Unfortunately, there's a list of about 200 things that we actually need coal for, and one of those things is steel to make windmills and solar panels. But there is a way to do it responsibly, and that's one of the things that the Manchin administration and a whole bunch of people in the industry and the Department of Environmental Protection are really, really up in arms about the Environmental Protection Agency, because what the EPA is doing is they're using science to determine exactly what they can do and what they can't. And they're outraged. You know, one of the things that I had to say to the governor today is the Environmental Protection Agency is exercising rights that they were given by the United States Congress. This is not a new thing. You know, he says that, you know, we have to know what rules we're going to live by. Well, the rules have been there for a long time. Just under the Bush administration, they chose not to enforce them. You know, it's not really complicated. Congress gave them the right to do this, to oversee the 404 permitting process if they felt the Army Corps was not doing their job. And when last Tuesday night in Charleston, West Virginia, is a perfect example of the history of the way the Army Corps of Engineers does their job, and that's why the Environmental Protection Agency has to do what they're doing today.
It's simple. The EPA exists to do this, and I share your frustration and I share your sense of outrage, although you're giving much better voice to it than I can. Lorella, I know you've had a long day and it doesn't need to get any longer, but I really appreciate you taking time to talk to folks and explain in a little more detail what's going on here. It seems simple on our side. It's being made complex by people who, for whom the complexity is, as you said, a question of profit.
That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. You know, the governor really had nowhere to go today when we talked about jobs, because the thing that they use is jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, if you really mean that, why are you not advocating for jobs forever in the coal fields instead of jobs for 17 years on this mountain? The lifespan of these mountaintop removal jobs, according to the coal company's own information, is a maximum of 17 years. We can have wind on this mountain forever. We can have revenue from this mountain for this county forever and the state.
And wind turbines have to be maintained. They have to be built. They have to be changed out. They have a finite lifespan.
To build them, to make them.
Yeah.
Hello? And they can continue to mine the coal responsibly underground while we are producing renewable energy and permanent jobs on the surface. It's a no-brainer.
Indeed it is. The problem is we may have a governor who has no brain. Oh, that's about as mean as I need to get, but that's what it feels like sometimes. Lorella, thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Keep us posted, please.
Okay.
Have as good an evening as you can.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Lorella Scarborough, community organizer for the Coal River Wind Project via Coal River Mountain Watch. I asked Lorella to call to talk about what happened today just in case you might harbor some thought that old Bob makes more out of this than there really is. There are criminal cases making their slow, tormented way through the magistrate court process right now, still trying to get convictions against the coal people who have done violence and violent acts toward people opposing mountaintop removal. On the other hand, when it comes to trying a young man for an act of peaceful civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience, by God, that thing roared right through the courts. When it comes to the case of a good friend of ours who's been on this program, who is a photographer, who had his equipment confiscated that was supposedly to be seized for evidence, well, guess what? Huh, how about that? It just happened to turn out that all of his equipment was destroyed. See what I mean? If this issue is not quickly federalized, what Lorella said is true. People are going to die because the coal industry never changes. And they are right back where they were 100 years ago, and their only avenue of expression is violence. So we'll take a little break. We're a little overdue for it. We'll take a little break, and we'll come back to your phone calls. There's time for phone calls and room for them, too. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This seems more than appropriate. Freedom on the horn. Yeah. Courtesy of John Fox, that is Swivelhead from Australia, and a brilliant cover of the Hendrix classic Freedom. An email just rolled in, before we go back to the phones, an email just rolled in from Jude, who says, there are many in this country who are calling to help all of you. The U.S. Marshal's Office, toll-free, is 1-800-336-0102. 800-336-0102. The headquarters of the United States Army Corps of Engineers is 202-761-0011. Again, 202-761-0011. And then, and I think this is important, the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, area code 202-514-3204. The questions? What would I ask if I was making this call? I would ask, why is the violence in West Virginia's southern coal fields not being taken as seriously as any other civil rights violation? Why were people subjected to mob violence this Tuesday night past in Charleston? Why were people refused accommodations in a public restaurant this past week? Why is no one having a long conversation with these coal companies to tell them, order them, to stop ramping up the violence? Why is that not being done? And that's a valid question for the Marshal's Office. Ask the Army Corps, I'd ask the Army Corps of Engineers, how is it that you can have a quiet, peaceful, competent hearing with a strong presence in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but you let one in Charleston, West Virginia degenerate into a mob scene? This is freedom of speech. This is freedom of the freedom of accommodation. This is freedom of association. Equal protection, due process, everything that marks a civil rights issue is present in the coal fields of southern West Virginia. And I want the violence stopped, because you know what? I can't stand the thought of any of these people that I have come to know and love being hurt or killed on account of nothing more than profit. Holy profit. Can't stand it. To the phones. Maybe. Nope, not to the phones. All lines open if you want to get in on the conversation. William wrote in a few minutes ago, he said, such choices people are left with. It's not even a choice, but a dreary sacrifice that a man has to risk his life and worry about his wife, and she has that added worry and fights cancer alone. And just to add, William says, I saw a commercial here in Southern California touting clean coal as a great choice because this company claims they must supply their customers with 24/7 power while they show windmills barely rotating, and then at the end show an electrical plug plugged into a lump of coal. All we have are facts. All we have is our truth and our passion and our refusal to be silenced. They have billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. But you know what? I don't care how many billions of dollars you have. You can't make a human being with it. That means we have the best chance. But the violence has to stop. We aren't perpetrating it. They are. And it must end. try the phones again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John. I figured since it was all open, I'd sneak in, you know, one of those club people. But early in the show, you were talking about that illegal alien costume thing. And we're having a bit of the illegal immigrant right-wing panties in a twist down here as well at the moment. And one of the things that Gail constantly corrects me on all the time is that there's no such thing as an illegal immigrant.
No. There's no such thing as an illegal human being.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, like we've been watching the debate here. We've had a few votes coming up on Australia recently. And of course the opposition immediately says, oh, this is because of your limp-wristed, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're just inviting them all in. And that's totally not the case. There are things going on in the world like Afghanistan, you know, where there are more people trying to flee. So you should expect them. And they're human beings. And P.J. O'Rourke was down here not long ago, and he was on a program where this subject came up. And I love P.J. for he's my favorite conservative out there because he's got a sense of humor and he sees things for what they are. And he said, you know what, why do you all keep wanting to shove these people away? These are the people you want to have as Australians. They put their lives at risk to get to the country. He said, these are the people you should be taking in, not trying to shove them away.
Makes sense to me.
These are the people that will be good, productive citizens because they worked really hard to get there. And I was really happy to hear the government, when they were getting hammered about this in Parliament yesterday, the immigration minister said, because which exactly are the policies you want us to go back to? Putting children behind barbed wire? Processing people on islands off the shore where the legality is shaky? Is that what you want to go back to? Because that's what we were doing up until about 2 years ago. You came over, even if you were an infant, you immediately went into imprisonment. And I don't know what these people are so scared of, but I this is something I have to correct myself on all the time. And it's the way the media gets things into your head. There's no such thing as an illegal being. So there's no such thing as an illegal immigrant. You have asylum seekers.
Yes.
You have people lost, people in strife, people trying to escape conflict. But there's no such thing as an illegal human being, which is basically what the term illegal immigrant tries to make you think.
Exactly. Well, and you know, with the stupid costume, John, you know that the alien head was just stuck on there as sort of an afterthought.
It was stuck on there as a way to make it deniable.
Plausible deniability. I hate that.
Yep. And I'm going to send you something you might want to, because you've been doing some of the environmental stuff. Uni Age yesterday was a great op-ed piece about how the system of politics is probably the worst way to try and get environmental change. And we're seeing that as the science. You know, we keep bowing to, you know, whether it's the coal companies or somebody's, you know, profit margin or this or that, when the science is dictating what's going to happen. And you can't bargain science. And that the whole...
No, you can't. You know, you can't negotiate with the law of gravity.
Bingo. Bingo. And I think this is where the... is falling wrong, trying to have it on ideological and economic grounds, as opposed to the fact that it's just scientific. This is what's going on. And if you're still denying that it's happening, you know, and you know, you hear right-wingers go, oh, I know that it's been cold, and they don't realize that there's an actual separation between climate and the weather.
Or the temperature. You know, when spring happens in July, something's wrong. and that's what we've been dealing with here. We didn't have a summer to speak of. And it wasn't particularly warm, but that's not a disproof of climate change. That's a proof of it.
Absolutely. As there's more potential energy in the atmosphere, there's going to be extremes in different places, as you know, because I mean, the atmosphere is constantly trying to go for temperature equilibrium, which it never reaches, and we keep pumping more and more of this energy into the atmosphere. It just is creating more potential. It's you know, I've been saying it for years. It's all a feedback loop.
Yes.
And if we get our heads around the fact that all of this that we pump out into the system is just pumping more energy into the feedback loop, I think it really succinctly puts the system that we're dealing with in perspective. And then we got to pull back on pumping this everything. I mean, you know, we talk about carbon because it's the easy one to point at. But, you know, as the ice caps go, the polar caps go, we're starting to have these massive methane releases, which are really scary.
Yeah,
that's the feedback loop. So there's my two little rants. But the big one, when I hear illegal alien, I can feel Gail smack me in the back of the head going, there's no such thing as an illegal.
No. No, absolutely not. Well, John, good to hear from you, brother. And do tell, we haven't had a good yak in a while. I miss the horn section. But tell Gail to keep whacking you on the back of the head, because she's absolutely right. Although I don't think you need that kind of whack very often, because it's not a tough concept to get. But you know what? The thing made an absolute monster of itself. That term inside our culture. And it's hard to escape and hard to evade. Did I lose you, John? I think I lost John. John Fox, host of All Foxed Up, Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Horn. We got time for some more good conversation. Let's keep it rolling and keep trying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Grant.
Hey, Grant. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Hey, my book came, and I got into it, sound through it, and I just can't say enough about it, so I wanted to get on the horn and tell people about it, if you don't mind.
Oh, do please.
It's called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization by Thomas H. Greco, Jr.
Okay.
Very interesting fellow. The thing I like about this particular book is that, I mean, there's Web of Debt, there's things like this that discuss the topic of the debt-ridden monetary system, the power elites, their lackeys in government, you know, their arms of influence. So it sounds like you guys are tangling with their foot soldiers, basically. But the thing I like about this book is it doesn't simply describe and diagnose. It actually puts forward solutions. I haven't gotten a full account of those just yet. But I like the way in which, in this book, you distill the actual problem. And I think it's the sort of thing that is one of the biggest strengths of the left, is that we have people like this distilling work. I mean, the popular culture has gone one direction. The economists and the false doctrine, basically, as I call them, that are taught in MBA schools and schools of economics have all blown past this within this orthodoxy that we now call normal. But this guy never forgot the past. And he went back and, you know, he stood on the shoulders of giants himself and meticulously went through their work as they meticulously did went through work of others and have distilled down to the essence of exchange, you know, of monetary instruments and these types of things, but the actual value really is. and this kind of thing. I don't know if I sound a little too abstract about it, but it's like he lays it out so well. I mean, it's such a clear characterization that the entire monetary system and financial system that we have is simply devised to extract the fruits of labor for people and cheat them at every turn as possible. It just amazes me, the scale of it, you know. The only good thing is that it burns itself out.
It burns itself out?
It burns itself out. It's like, I think he described it really well. It's like a thermostat that when it senses an excess of heat in the room, turns itself up. And it just, you know, you've got exponential debt, you've got, you just got the whole nine yards. You've got a pro-growth, built-in, hardwired to fail imperative that is, can't be supported even if you had a galaxy of material, because eventually you just keep wanting to consume more, much less than one planet. You know, and it's just, it's such a fundamentally flawed system in these ways that it will burn itself out.
I guess the question, Grant, is because of the fact that a number of groups, organizations, people, interests have succeeded in making capitalism something approaching religious doctrine in this country, how do you communicate that? And I don't even know if this is touched upon, but how do you communicate that in such a way as to make it comprehensible to people that you're not talking about a change in system because you want some other system? You're talking about a change in system because if there's no change, the collapse is going to be massive.
I believe that he's expressed it way better than I could, but I'll give it a shot, okay? It's a simultaneous two-step of rejecting the old system, and it's basically unplugging that and plugging it into something local and new as a basic move. One move like that. There's a website out there. It's called exchange-communities.org.
Okay, exchangecommunities.org.
Yeah. And they're a manifestation of the kind of changes that he's talking about. I'm just getting to the point where he's talking about short-term exchange credit and long-term financing and some of the differences between them. But that book, I think that book and that website are the two best friends of study I have to actually even, I think, lance the boil and start seeing some solutions. And I'm sort of half deduced that, okay, what's going to have to happen is you got to get involved with a local exchange or start one and understand the theories behind it before you start one and get involved. So you have to, you know, the whole idea here is that you have your eyes open all the time and you start looking at these things. And it's basically unplugging from a system where a money system that, okay, everything you try to do is undermined by the very hardwired nature of the system itself. It refuses to change. It undercuts the democracy. It grinds everybody except this 1% that wants to rule. It doesn't help anybody. It really doesn't. But these other things and some of the stuff he's talking about, the whole intention to uphold the dignity of labor, that people should, you know, see the benefits and the fruits of their labor instead of having the system sort of invisibly cull the value out of it underneath them. It's like pulling a rug out from underneath them. And I think that's what I get from his work the most thus far in the book.
Wonderful. And the name of the book again, please, Grant?
The End of Money and the Future of Civilization.
By?
Thomas H. Greco, Jr.
Excellent. Well, I know that this stuff fascinates me, and I know that it fascinates a number of folks. So,
especially the cause of civilization over the cause of money, essentially. Yeah. Anyway, I got you off, sorry.
No, that's okay. I've got a couple more blinking lights, and I just want to try to reach people. Thank you for that very much, Grant, and hopefully we will discuss this at some greater depth on another night this week, perhaps.
I'd look forward to that.
All right. Grant, thank you very much, and have a good evening. All right.
Okay, take care.
Bye. Grant calling from Oregon, and we roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello. Pardon?
This is Michael.
Oh, hey, Michael. Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got technical dropout problems on this end, so every now and then I miss a word or two, and it just happened to be your name. How's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm a little spooked, but I'm awfully proud of the folks who went to Charleston today.
Definitely. Hey, I just wanted to hit a few things real quick, and then I'll get out of the way here. I'm sure I can't do this nearly as well as Kate can, but just real briefly, I just want to hit a couple of things. I don't know if this has been mentioned on the program before, but at crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, there's a neat little raffle going on.
Yes, there is. Thank you for mentioning it.
I know I'm gonna send in my check to get a few of the raffle tickets sometime this week here. It says the drawing will be held on December 10th, 2009, so I assume any time before then you can get your tickets, but there's no reason to wait, and I don't mind decreasing my chances of winning by telling everybody else that they should contribute. What it is, I don't know, maybe you can explain better than I can, but it's a maple walking stick that was, let me see here. Well, it was donated by, and correct me if I pronounce any names wrong, it was donated by Maria Gano,
right,
2009 Goldman Prize winner, to Hans, 2003 Goldman Prize winner. And it's just, go to crmw.net. crmw.net. It explains it better than I can.
Yeah, and the raffle tickets are cheap. And you can,
raffle tickets are, yeah.
You can do it, you can either do it by snail mail, or you can do it by, you can do it by PayPal and just designate, raffle tickets, in the message box at PayPal.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. If you go to crmw.net, you don't even have to look around for it. It's, at least right now, it's the first thing on the page. You'll see Coal River Valley Raffle, and it looks like a just beautiful, very intricately carved walking stick. I'm not exactly a collector of walking sticks, but this looks like a really beautiful piece of art that, I mean, I'd like to have. I'm sure a lot of people would just love to have.
And that's the thing. It's got a tool's functionality, but it is art.
Right. Yeah. And tickets are, it says $4 each or 3 for 10. So, and of course, you know, you're supporting Coal River Valley Mountain, or, you know, Coal River Mountain Watch. So you can't go wrong there, even if you don't win. The other thing I wanted to hit on was I just happened to get my print in the mail from Diane, the For the Love of West Virginia print.
Yes.
And I assume there's still probably some left.
There are some.
It is everything I've imagined it to be based on what the picture I saw online. It's just gorgeous, you know, tenfold compared to what I had imagined it would be. I just opened it up. It's just beautiful quality paper, beautiful quality print. I can't wait to get it into a proper frame and put it up. And, of course, they're all individually numbered and signed. And Diane, I got to tell you, I'm just really impressed just opening up the package. You want to order one of these if you can afford it. You want to order one of these just to see her business card. It's about the most beautiful business card I've ever seen.
Oh, I know.
And, even the
business card is art.
Yeah, yes, it is. And even though it's only text, the little I'm not sure. Maybe it's not 5x7, but there's a little information card included in it that talks about you know, the protecting the mountains, and talks about the horn, and you know, and where the money went. That you, you know, if you bought one of these prints, you know, where your money went. And it, there's a little information card that Diane included in it. That's it's just text, but it's multicolor. Even that's like a little piece of art. I almost want to like frame that too and put it below the.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe get it framed and matted, and then in a separate little space in the same frame for the, yeah, that would, because I thought the same thing, Michael.
I mean, it's just text, but even the way she laid out this little extra text card that was included is just beautiful.
Well, and that's the whole thing. The whole thing was a labor of love.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, like it has an art gallery, you know, they got the painting and then they got the little text card below it, so it's like, yeah, I'm going to do that in my house here. You know, so, yeah, so if you can afford it, if you're wondering, well, you know, $75, that's, yeah, it is kind of a lot for, you know, a little miniature poster, but, you know, if you're going to donate to the horn anyway, it's a real fun way to do it if you can afford it. So I would highly recommend that. Diane did a wonderful job. They're just beautiful. So here's one testimonial for the print. Last thing I just wanted to say, so the horn, if I understand correctly, is going to turn 4 on Saturday.
Yeah, I guess we've made it all the way to toddler status.
Cool. How's the fundraising going?
You know, I'm just glad that we got over the hump that was staring at. It's, you know, we're right around $1,000 for the monthly fundraising, but that's in addition to what we had to do to stay, you know, to meet that drop dead date.
Sure. I just want to put out a challenge this weekend, and if possible, I don't always have time to come in, to call in. So maybe somebody else could repeat it for me the rest of the week. Otherwise, I'll try to call in every day this week. Let me just ask you something, Bob. If somebody contributes, say, $4 or $5 via PayPal,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works. Does PayPal skim just a flat percentage?
Oh yeah, PayPal skims some of everything.
But is it just a flat percent? Like what I guess I'm asking is if someone wants to just contribute, say, $5, is that worthwhile, or is it like not even worth it because PayPal takes it all?
They don't take it all, but I mean they take some of it. We get in excess of $4.50.
Okay. Okay. Well, I don't know. Depending on what you think of this or not, but I was just thinking, everybody listening, and I don't normally like to do this because I understand there's, you know, a lot of people, you know, I'm lucky enough to be employed, so, you know, I got some cash coming in. I understand there's, you know, there's people out of work, there's people on fixed incomes who are retired. I understand, you know, if you can't contribute, I totally sympathize. I know people. You know, I'm close to people that are in situations where they just, you know, don't have anything to spare for anything. But I think most people probably, if you're listening to this, you know, if you're an internet connection and all that kind of stuff, just give $4 this week. That's my thing. If you want to do more, that's fine. You know. Earmark it for the birthday. I've already contributed this month. I'm just going to do it again. If it's like you don't want to mess around $4, just add $4 to whatever you were going to do. If you've never donated to the horn, just, you know, do the PayPal thing. I mean, I think you could probably do PayPal just $4 via the horn's website.
I think the bottom line cutoff is $5.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I think it is.
Okay, well, then how about this? $5. Okay, don't make it to 4, so put in $5 to try to get us to the 5th birthday.
Yes.
Damn it, will that work?
Yeah, that works.
All right, So just put it, just everybody listening. I mean, I don't know how big the listenership is, but I mean, if 1,000 people put in $5 this week, that would, that would be what, 2.5 months? So what?
Yeah.
What the normal fundraising is?
Yeah.
Just $5. I mean, even if you already have, just put in another $5. $5. We made it to 4. We got to get to 5. You know, year 5. So let's start off the 5th year. Let me put it that way. By just putting in $5. If you've donated before, just find it somewhere. Just find. I mean, if you're gonna starve, don't do it. But just find it somewhere. Just put in another 5. If you're gonna contribute anyway, just add an extra 5 this month. If this is the first or second time you've listened to the horn and you think it's a bunch of crap, then fine, don't. But if you've been
now, do it anyway.
Yeah, sure. Do it anyway.
Because otherwise you'll do something stupid with that $5.
That's true. But I was just going to say, I mean, if you've been listening to the horn, let's say you've been listening at least a month, or let's say you've ever gone, you know, a month without missing a show. What if you've never contributed before, just come on, just kick in $5. This isn't normally something I would do because I can't do it as well as Kate, but, you know, it's not hard. Just $5. It's the birthday. I'm only going to call in this one.
Yeah, you'd spend that on a birthday card.
Right. Yeah, don't send a birthday card. Just send $5. And okay, see, if you're saying the minimum for the paper, and you know, send a check if you need to. Hell, just send $5 in cash if you really have to. Obviously, I don't like sending cash in the mail, but, you know, $5, it'll probably get there. You know, it's no big whoop if, you know, if you lose it, and, you know, most chances it'll make it there. But, you know, send a check or do it PayPal. And I think so you're saying the minimum is $1. I think if you do a minimum of $5, I think you can still put your name on the little donation wall on the Horn website, I believe. Or if you don't want to put your name, you could just put a message. I think I'm correct about that, aren't I?
I'll have to check on that. Michael, thank you very much. We got to roll because we're right up against the end of the show, but it's a great idea.
Oh, shoot. Sorry about that. I didn't even notice the time.
Oh, no sweat. Michael, thank you very much, my friend. And I'm glad you love the poster, the print.
Let's just keep that going this week. Everybody listening, if you can, put in $5 to kick off year 5.
Very good. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Bye now.
You too.
So that's the show for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for getting us off to a great start on this Monday. Michael's got a beautiful idea there. Thank you to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, who continues to recover. Thank you to Ben Birch. Hope Katie's feeling better. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. You found out again tonight what kind of courage they have, and you know why I call them the bravest, hardest working people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week. I'm excited. I hope you are as well. Headphones work much better when they're plugged all the way in. I was gone for a couple of days, and I suspect that horn intern junior grade Ferg was back here listening to music and learning stuff and playing stuff. And consequently, the headphones it sounded funny. So, but everything's okay now. Let's see. Let's check this real quick, because I forgot to. Yeah, that's a dial tone. That means the phones work. Okay. We're in good shape for a Monday. Happy Monday. Glorious Monday. And it's a Monday that sort of lends itself to our new Monday theme. Moran Monday. We have a Moran. We've got a couple of Morans. We've got Morans writing about Morans. We ain't hurting for... We are Moran poor. There we go. But we've also got a sort of a common theme going. Or not a common theme, but... No, it's not common at all. It's... What's the word I'm looking for? We got two stories coming out of the South, one close to home, spiritually speaking, and one not so. Let's see if I can just make it work by jumping into it. By the way, where I was on the road. This past weekend, I was down in beautiful Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it is that's a beautiful campus. It really is a beautiful campus. The whole area is a little too flat for my liking, but it's a beautiful place. Once you get away from the interstate, and once you get away from along I-40 between, say, the Winston-Salem and... Little past Greensboro, nothing but sprawl and giant billboards for outlets. Bargains, bargains, bargains. Sorry, no bargains, but you know that. But once you get off the highway and you get into a little place like Chapel Hill, it is an exquisite. It's gorgeous. Small town, college town. I love college towns. What can I say? And I got to speak to some very engaged young people at PowerShift Carolinas, and I want to thank the folks involved for inviting me down there. It was a marvelous, wonderful experience and an excellent opportunity to make the horrors of mountaintop removal real, or more real. For folks who really want to take charge of making the world a better place on behalf of their generation. See, my generation and the generations afterward, we've screwed the planet up real good, and it's their turn. 20-somethings that are just figuring out, what do I want out of this world? Do I want a 55-inch, 555-inch, do I want a wall-size, the big-screen TV and lots of... HD coming in and trips to Wally World 3 times a day. No. And I get the sense that there really is some rethinking going on.
about what the world they're going to be adults in while we're gumming our creamed corn, if not pushing up daisies, will look like. And I commend all the young people. There were a good 7,500 of them, and from schools all around the Carolinas. And it really was inspiring. They're dedicated to the idea of finding an energy future that involves, well, that's got a more of a justice component to it, that is diminished in cruelty, that doesn't necessarily have to ride on the backs of poor folks. I know from talking to a couple of them that they had a good time and that they had a great learning experience at PowerShift Carolinas. And I did too, because it's inspiring for me to know that there is a next generation coming up who will pick up the torch and will carry it forward and will not let the bastards win. So that's where I was. And I got home late last night and just sort of started trying to get my head back into the prospect of getting back into the routine of being on the air. This is birthday week, amazing enough. On Saturday, officially, the date falls on Saturday this year, we will be 4 years old. The horn will be 4 years old. It is hard to imagine how much has come and gone, how many have risen and fallen in those 4 years, but the horn is still here. And it's still here because of you, and it's still here because of the incredible dedication of the people who volunteer their time for the horn, our news ninjas, our blogger, moderators in the chat room, Sue, who has done so much to just climb learning curves and take on new responsibilities and learn new stuff. She provided me with some great mountaintop removal video to take with me, all on the supposition that this has to survive, because it's not happening anywhere else. So it is birthday week. It's also birthday day for our pal Sparky from the chat room. Very happy birthday to him. You've heard him on the program from time to time. Happy birthday, Sparky. Many happy returns. So where to go this evening? Well, like I said, it's not really an incongruity. It's not really a commonality. But I was going over my email before the program started. And, by the way, this in from our pal Marty, college towns and college campuses are great places to be, especially during warm weather. Oh, yeah.